You're listening to Not So Live from Asteroid G. Stealing a helicopter and getting revenge for our dead wife. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Your buddy Mike the Ghoul here, getting progressively more naked with each opening crawl we get.
Right, my God, man.
We're not even hiding it anymore.
No, I noticed that. We're talking two James Bond movies today as we approach the end of the Roger Moore era. We are discussing For Your Eyes Only and then Octopussy, one of the two of which I legitimately enjoyed.
Yeah.
And it's not the more famous of the two, which is kind of funny.
It was very interesting. When I knew these two were up, I was like, okay, I've obviously seen these at some point. But rewatching them, I'm like, oh, cool. I remember Octopussy being good. I don't really remember For Your Eyes Only. And then I was like, this is moderately a better movie than anything I've seen Roger Moore in up till now.
No,
and then in the other one. But
no.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Spoilers for what we're about to discuss in detail. But I found For Your Eyes Only to be a very modest and very well-made James Bond spy thriller that just so happened to have Roger Moore. He's actually decent in the movie, even if he is already getting a little too old to be in these. But he's decent in the movie. He accounts himself fairly well. And the film that handles its content without all the usual gags and slide whistles and everything else that the company Eon Productions apparently felt they had to do for the goofy Roger Moore era, which I will never understand. But I really rather liked For Your Eyes Only. And then we got to Octopussy, and it was so much worse. Like,
Right back to that racism that is so thick in the movies from time to time.
Sexual assault, stupid jokes, everything that made The Man with the Golden Gun so much worse. And that was actually kind of tolerable. This one really kind of isn't. But everything that made The Man with the Golden Gun so much worse is fully on display here once more. And it's just painful.
It really is. Credit at least to Roger Moore at the end of the day for not, you know, channeling his inner Waterson. You know, the older I get, they stay the same age. Because these Bond girls, they just keep getting younger and younger. And he just looks like their grandfather now. Not even like an uncle that shouldn't be going out on a date with them.
It's pretty bad. For Your Eyes Only, after an opening sequence where Bond gets his revenge on Blofeld, even though Blofeld isn't actually
Blofeld.
Clearly done because the rights to Blofeld and all of Spectre reverted over to what's-his-face that wanted to go make the Thunderball remake, and they couldn't have Blofeld anymore or Spectre, so they just kill an unnamed Blofeld off in an opening sequence just for the hell of it before we all move on. Which
is very campy, by the way.
It was not that great. No, I will agree. Thankfully, the movie settles down afterwards. Yeah. But functionally, what we then learn is that the British have a coordination ship disguised as a fishing trawler. And it coordinates all the British ships in the area. And it's a central hub. It knows where all the British ships are. It has the tech to keep track of everything. And if this tech is lost somehow, then the British fleet would be in ruins. And then, somehow, someone figures out it's a fishing trawler, mines it, the ship blows up, and the guys who are supposed to blow up the tech within the ship don't, so that sunken ship has the tech. Bond is called in, because the deep-sea diving team that's supposed to investigate this wreck is killed. The only one left alive is the dude's daughter. She decides to help Bond. They go investigate all while we get a back and forth as Bond tries to figure out who the bad guy is and thinks he knows who he is but doesn't know who he is. But eventually he figures out who the villain is and they go after him and they stop him from actually taking the device which he stole off of Bond and selling it to the KGB because he's clearly a defector. It's a very twisty movie, and as far as espionage films are concerned, it actually works pretty well.
Bad. Your notes say like a lot of Cold War vibes in here, and you're starting to really get that. We don't trust anybody. Communism is at your gates kind of thing. So the movie plays on its time frame and what's going on in the world very well.
Yeah, and between this one and Octopussy, and then before that we had The Spy Who Loved Me with the KGB showing up prominently there as well, we get a real sense that the movies are shifting from using Spectre as their stand-in for the evil of the world, and just being like, well, we can have the KGB here, and sometimes they're bad, and sometimes they're good, and there's nuance to it. And you know what? I appreciate that nuance. Sometimes Bond is allied with the KGB, sometimes he's standing in opposition, and that's kind of how the politics of the world worked at the time. It's the most realistic thing about these fucking movies, is that you never know what the KGB is up to.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
And they're not generic villains, and I think that makes this film stronger.
Yes, Yes.
Honestly, that's the problem with this movie, is I liked it enough that I don't have a lot to bitch about, even if I did write a lot of notes.
You sure did. I'm reading your notes as I'm going. I'm like, he's not writing a lot of not liking, aside from, like, you know, the obvious points that you see in these movies that are 40 plus years old at this point. But overall, as a story, this was one of the better ones we've seen in the Roger Moore era. And
probably the best of it. Yeah.
I would say so. And, like, you know, I always have a soft spot for Moonraker and all that because of Jaws. But, like, this was a movie that I had very low expectations for that really hit, like, on Your Majesty's Secret Service to me. Like, wow, this was one of the better Bond movies that I didn't remember. I didn't give it enough credit for.
If this one had shown up in the Lazenby era, or if, like, it waited a little bit and gone for Brosnan or Dalton, I wouldn't have suspected at all that this was meant for Roger Moore. This is a perfectly decent real Bond movie. What is it doing in the Roger Moore era?
I don't know. I mean, I guess they hit that point in, you know, Sir Alfred Broccoli's works to bring it out, and the short stories of all that. So
I guess
I don't know. But it was a good movie in a relatively weak era of films, which is, I mean, at least it was a midpoint that kind of got your hopes up until
until it drops back down again for the next two. But we'll get that. So yeah, that opening sequence with Blofeld, he comes in to attack Bond after Bond visits Tracy Bond's gravestone, which I appreciate them continuing the references to her. He then gets Bond trapped in a helicopter, and Blofeld has control of the helicopter and decides to have fun spinning James Bond around for a little while when the rest was sitting there going, "Crash the helicopter into the ground, you fucking moron."
Typical fucking bad guy got me monologue and bullshit, right?
Like, it was so, like, I'm sitting there going, dude, you've got him in the air helicopter for 5 minutes. You're letting him wander around and try and take control of it from the outside. Why aren't you just crashing the thing already?
I don't know, man. Very, very strange decisions. But I mean, what else are you going to get from a Bond villain, I guess, at the time?
Yeah, but that is what I agree with you. That is the campy part of this movie right up front. Thankfully, we got it out of the way. Then we get into the main movie, which does start weakly with the song For Your Eyes Only, which is boring.
it's a
boring song.
It's not very good.
No.
Maybe that's why they threw a little more extra nudity in there for
us.
I don't know.
There's a lot of nudity in these opening credits, which is surprising. Like, you can see a lot that you shouldn't be seeing in a PG movie. I will say that much.
Yeah.
And then it also has Sheena Eaton, the performer of the song, actually appearing on screen, which is the only time in a Bond movie that's ever happened.
Yeah.
General Gogol shows up, as we said. He was in Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker. He's here and he's an octopussy. And I think he even shows up in the last one. I looked it up. He gets a 5-movie track here for this continuity of the KGB. And then at that point, the Berlin Wall falls. And I guess they're like, well, we can't use the KGB anymore. Bye, Gogol. Oh, well.
Yeah. Oh, he always treaded that line very well for me in the movies of, like,
yeah,
to your point, like, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy?
Well performed.
I can't really tell. Well, well done by him. Yeah.
And also good that, unlike other characters in the films who constantly switch, like the 8 different versions of Felix Leiter that we see over the years, it's the same actor performing Gogol all 5 times. So it's nice continuity of the Roger Moore era for once.
Yeah, agreed.
Carolyn Bouquet, who played Melina Havelock, our Bond girl for this film, at the time of the film's release, she was 24 and Roger Moore was 54. And that's already a bad May-December kind of relationship. And that's still good in comparison to the math that we're going to get eventually.
That math ain't mathing for me right now. At least he doesn't come off as creepy in the movie.
No,
like that,
there are some moments where you're sitting there going, Melina, why are you with this dude? But at least there's some decent chemistry. The other one that shows up, Lynn Holly Johnson, who plays BB Doll. She was 23 at the time of this film's release, which is a year younger. And Bond,
any better.
Bond here is like, I don't actually want to do anything with you. You're a little young for me, girl. It's kind of funny watching him shove her off when Connery would already be up inside her before she even finished, like, saying her first sentence,
I know.
Yeah.
I could see him do something like some cue magnetic things with her ice skates or something.
Yeah.
James Bond, like, oh, my God.
Yeah, there'd be a slide whistle. Yeah. terrible. Melina shows up and saves Bond's ass and proves herself to be a very effective person out in the field. So, of course, naturally, Bond has to take over and basically relegate her to the sidelines for the rest of the movie.
We cannot have a strong female protagonist yet.
Not at all.
Not exist in these Bond movies yet.
Not in the Roger Moore era. I don't think we actually get that until Michelle Yeoh shows up in Pierce Brosnan's films. Like, you're just not allowed to have it.
Yeah,
it's pretty weird. Bad. Bond warns Melina about seeking revenge on the men that orchestrated her parents' death. And she says, you wouldn't understand. You're English. You don't seek revenge. Which would have worked so much better if we hadn't seen, at the start of the movie, Bond go and get revenge against Blofeld for killing Tracy Bond. I'm like, I feel like that sequence probably should have been in a different movie if you want to sell the idea of dig two graves when you seek revenge, you know?
I mean, it's like, that's the moment where, like, I'm waiting for, like, the fourth wall break of, like, turning to the camera, like, really? But it just never happens.
Don't listen to what I'm saying, guys! It's pretty bad. I did appreciate that when Bond is doing his regular Q lab check-in, which is stupid. The Q lab check-ins are dumb. But to get into the section where they can start working on the case, Q has to enter a special code into his door, and it's the opening notes to Nobody Does It Better. And I'm like, okay, you know, that's dumb, but I kind of like it. It's kind of okay. I can believe that's
something Q would do, right? Yeah. Like, Q seems goofy enough to do something like that.
It's a bit of a fourth wall break. Like, Q knows James Bond's theme songs, but at the same time, I'm going to accept it because it's at least a nice little reference.
Yeah, it's a nice little touch.
Yeah, there's a long chase sequence through the 1980 Winter Olympics because BB is a figure skater who has hopes of being in the Olympics. So there's a long 1980s Winter Olympics sequence from the biathlon through the ski jump and then to the luge, which is kind of fun, but it does go on for like 10 minutes and drags the movie down after a little while. And also, it's very repetitive considering we got almost all of those same sports from Her Majesty's Secret Service during its run of the Winter Olympics.
I don't know, maybe they felt like there was something they got to keep going on for a while, but this did drag, like you said.
It did.
You know, the
second time's not the charm.
The ski jump was kind of neat, and the biathlons, you know, with guns, it's always kind of cool, but like
it didn't really work, and I would have appreciated if they'd just done something else instead.
The ski chase scene at the beginning of the other movie, when they're chasing him through the Alps and all that, and he could probably love me. Yeah, literally the last movie we watched. But, like, that was a better sequence chase than this one.
This was too long. It didn't feel nearly as interesting. And maybe in part that's because Bond is 54. Just very old. We do get actually a third Bond girl in this movie. That is the Countess von Schlaff, who's played by Cassandra Harris, who is at least more appropriate in the age pairing because she was a whole 33 years old, only 20 years younger.
Math is better.
Still the wrong generation, but you know what?
At least she knows what her favorite alcoholic drink is by now, probably.
Right? She's still not experimenting in college and figuring herself out yet.
Has that quiet lesbian phase, doesn't tell anybody about kind of thing. Like.
Wow. I did notice during the sequence where, of course, the one age-appropriate Bond girl dies, we get a young Charles Dance showing up, who was he looked so young.
Little baby face, right? Yes. Like, oh my god, I love Charles Dance, too. He's fantastic. What a great actor he is.
There's a good double cross halfway into the film that works within the plot. The guy who we thought was a good guy is actually a bad guy. The guy we were set up to be the bad guy is a good guy. The film gets twisty and it actually makes the film better. And I kind of wish more of the Bond films in general, and especially during the Roger Moore movies, had this kind of twisty, non-linear plotting.
It would make it... I mean, they kind of try to get this in later Bond movies and stuff like that, but, like, this was a good twist that I didn't remember coming either. And I was like, oh, he didn't telegraph this very well. No. You know, like, this was a good little shock surprise.
It was.
And I appreciated that.
It worked in context really nicely. Yeah. A bad part, the hardest part of the film to believe, is that a 54-year-old man could run up 10 flights of stairs. There's a chase sequence with a car driving up a mountain, which I'm going to ask, where the fuck was that car going if it was trying to get away from him, if it's going up a mountain? And then Bond is hoofing it uphill on stairs. And I'm sitting there going, dude, after one flight of stairs, I'm winded. And I'm like 10 years younger than you. How are you making it up these stairs?
I know. It's crazy, right? Like, the wind on this man is phenomenal.
Yeah, that is some bad plotting right there. Yeah, and again, where the fuck is that car going? Like, is there a helicopter up there? We never know. It's really stupid.
It's a weird sequence,
Those are minor quibbles in what I think is otherwise a very decent movie. Moments like that, I could laugh at because I'm like, 10 flights of stairs. He's not making that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but the movie's pretty good. It's pretty good.
It's really not a bad film in the spread of, like, what we've seen to this point. You know, Bond is campy, Bond is fun, but this was a genuinely good Bond movie, which we haven't gotten. A lot of the ones have just been kind of crappy and just kind of like fun for the Bond part of being fun, but this was genuinely good. This was probably top three or four that we've seen so far for me. Like, this is this has gotten up there, and I was surprised about that.
Yeah, no, this is definitely, like, near the top of my list for the Roger Moore era, and it's probably in top five for me of Bond in general. We'll,
I was thinking that, yeah.
We'll recap era and total list, I think, after we get to the end of the Roger Moore era, but right now, this is a pretty high up one, because it's pretty good.
Yeah. It's strong, yeah.
It's a strong contender. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the follow-up, Octopussy, is not. Before we get into the second film, though, we do want to take a moment and thank our sponsors for the week, Delos Inc. Have you ever wanted to be a cowboy riding across the Old West? Or a samurai battling for their lives in Edo, Japan? What about being a knight, shining resplendent before you head to the joust that might just be your doom? There's a world of possibilities with Delos, makers of the famous Westworld. You can be whoever you want, go wherever you want, and the story unfolds before you. Find your adventure before your adventure comes for you. Delos Inc. Experience the possibilities. And thank you to our sponsors. I gotta be honest with you, I just watched Octopussy yesterday. Like, literally. And I already don't remember how most of the plot comes together because it is so forgettable. There's, like, a circus and someone dies. And there's a fake Fabergé egg. And then they use it to steal the real Fabergé egg because there's some plotting about a rogue faction of the KGB making these gems to sell these gems, but also to, like, import a nuclear bomb onto a West Berlin America base. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot of plot for what amounts to basically 15 minutes of story stretched over 2 hours. Like, the actual plot itself can be summarized in a couple of note cards, but the film faffs around for a good hour and a half just to get there.
It sure does. Oh. You know, there's some dragon in this that just it just keeps going. And there's forgettable people in this movie that I just don't care about these characters.
No.
It's just like, I mean, they tried hard, like, throwing a new henchman at us and everything that's supposed to be imposing and all that. But, like, it just was not good.
No, there's nothing to this.
I hate the stupid, like, bait and switch shit in movies, too, where, like, I'm going to switch the real for the fake and then put the fake back and track that one because I really wanted to take that. Like, I hate
and it doesn't amount to anything.
It's so cliche.
It does. He steals the egg at an auction so that the fake egg goes back to the guys to, like, somehow foil their plans. But then he lets them steal the real egg afterwards so that they can then have the egg and not do anything. Like, I don't... Yeah, so much of the plot is just a line of conveniences. It's, like we said with Disclosure Day, it's an and-then movie. James Bond shows up, and then something happens, so James Bond can go over here. There's not really any espionage. There's not really much in the way of, like, tight connective tissue. He meets the villain almost immediately, knows that they're the villain, and then just kind of follows the villain around the world for 2 hours. And the most interesting thing is when there's kind of sort of a double cross between the villain and the villain's partner, Octopussy, but that's not even really well written because Octopussy's barely a character in this film.
She really isn't for having the name in the title crawl, right?
Yeah, I mean, no.
She's a very forgettable part of this movie, and I thought, like, she would have a much bigger part. Like, Pussy Galore from many movies ago had a much bigger part in her movie, and you don't even know about her for two-thirds of it.
Right?
So,
yeah. No, she... know. It's like they introduce all these weird characters and everything to justify having a circus set piece that doesn't even need to be there. Like, don't get me wrong. They use the circus trains as a cover to import the nuclear bomb across West German, East German lines, which makes sense. That was a decent bait and switch fake out. But again, that's like a tiny 5 minutes of the movie for that one actual key plot line, when the rest of the movie barely relates to it all. The biggest relation we get is that Octopussy invests in circuses for reasons.
I don't know. Maybe she really enjoys trapeze. I'm not really
sure. I mean, don't get me wrong. Back in the 70s and 60s, circuses were probably much bigger than they are now. Now you think about going to the circus and you're like, that's like a $2 ticket and you're bored for an hour. Like, it's not... We make our own fun now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I can watch a circus on YouTube for free. Like,
yeah, it doesn't have the same appeal. Circuses are a dying art. They might have been bigger then, and maybe getting thrilled about a circus was a big deal. It's one of those plot points that probably made sense then that really doesn't make sense now. And I'm just sitting there going, I am so utterly bored by everything happening in this movie.
Yeah, you know, there's some things in these movies that are just old. Like, so the games they play when they gamble sometimes, very classic games. To, you know, it's 1983 and we're still talking about circuses being relevant. Like, maybe Barnum and Bailey, like, was big at the time. I remember seeing Barnum and Bailey when I was a young kid, but like circuses are not really a thing anymore. And even like those traveling acrobats and stuff like that, like that's not really a thing. Like you get like Shen Yu from China, but like, I don't know. Like it's just, it's weird, but point, maybe it's just, you can relate more for the time, even though I still feel like this is 20 years too late for the plot point.
Oh, it is. It absolutely, it doesn't make sense in the context. It doesn't make sense out of context. It's just this weird thing where they're like, let's have a circus in here for a different set of set pieces, which if you're going to do that, you need to unify it to the plot better instead of just having some of the circus performers are evil for reasons. Like the KGB sitting there going, who can we make defect to our side? You know what? Circus people.
Nobody suspects the circus.
Right. It's like in a different context, you'd expect this in a Monty Python skit, not in a James Bond movie.
Like, seriously, right? Like the Ministry of like Funny Bond over here, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It was weird, but I mean, I guess you're trying to show like athletic people with the, I don't know. It's just weird.
It's a real step down from the Winter Olympics, which itself was a step down from having already done that like twice before in previous Bond movies. Right? I don't know.
And it's like they rolled a dice, like, or played Mad Libs. Like, let's do Bond through Mad Libs. Like,
spin the wheel. Like, what's the plot point to come up today?
Winner. Let's make it happen.
Like, right. Oh, well. So, yeah, it's really dumb. It's a dumb movie from start to finish. It even starts bad. Like, Bond goes to thwart a Cuban something. So he sneaks onto a military base with a fake horse in a cart so that he can then dress up like with a reversible costume, dress up like one of the Cuban officers and blow something up that they're working on. And then he's almost immediately caught because Bond is an idiot and his whole plan is stupid. But he manages to escape, get into the back of his cart with like the fake horse, and the fake horse opens up to reveal a mini jet. And I'm like, what are we even doing here? This is, how did this make it? Like, no one thought to look when they were checking security at the fake horse ass. Like, what is this?
I don't know. AI wrote this 40 years ago. I had no idea what we're looking at that point. So
like, it only works in the context of the silly Roger Moore era, which would have been better if we had just had For Your Eyes Only right beforehand. This from Moonraker, I buy. This from Your Eyes Only, I don't.
Yeah, I mean, from Your Eyes Only, like, the campiness of Blofeld was kind of funny. It's like they felt like they had to up the ante for this one and do something else crazy. Like before the movie starts, Bond needs to do something wild, and, like, what kind of crazy gadget can we give him to get out of here? And, like, I got it, a horse's ass that turns into a rocket. Like, perfect.
Why not? Spin that wheel, see what else comes up.
I know, right? It's just crazy.
We go from that into the Bond theme song for the day, All Time High, which I think was written by the same people who wrote the previous one, and it is, to be fair, as boring as the previous one.
Yeah, not very good. Not very good.
You know what? At this point, bring back Wings. Come on. I would rather listen to them with their shit than All Time High. So bad. We got Agent 009, who was dressed as a clown at the circus to infiltrate, which he somehow has the Fabergé egg from the circus, which in the context of the rest of the movie also doesn't make much sense. Like, the plotting to get there is really back-assward, and it's basically 009 was there just so that we could get the Fabergé egg to get that to Bond. If you try and piece backwards to how this all happened, it doesn't make any sense within the plot of the movie whatsoever. But he's there, and he's dressed as a clown running through the woods, and you're sitting there going, it's really hard to be stealthy when you're dressed like a clown.
I mean, at least you're trying to blend in, I guess. You are at the circus, but...
But not anymore. Now you're out in the woods running from knife throwers.
I mean, you might as well be running with a target on your head or something. Like, I don't get it.
Big shoes flapping, honky nose going. You're just like...
That reminds me of, like, I was younger, tangent real quick, but, like, my stepdad used to have, like, a book of police stories or whatever, I remember, and it had the guy got caught stealing and he couldn't figure out because he kept up running the cops, like, how he couldn't get away from them. It's because he had those fucking, like, LA lights in his shoes and they just kept following the shoes.
Right.
Like, it was, like, that kind of level of stupid. Like, how do they keep finding me? You look like a fucking clown in the middle of, like, the woods. Like,
the brightly colored, oh, my God. You try to hide behind a tree and your shoes stick out. Like, come on. Bond, once he knows the plan and he has the egg and he's following the villain and following the whole plan of this, because he sees the villain at the auction house where he swaps the eggs, he then goes and confronts the villain, and the villain immediately knows who Bond is, because Bond's the worst secret agent ever. And they get into a pissing match over competitive backgammon, which is nowhere near as interesting as Baccarat. And Baccarat wasn't that interesting to begin with.
No, it wasn't. And again, it's a game I don't understand that I'm watching old people play.
Yeah. He somehow catches the bad guy, Khan, out cheating at backgammon. I'm like, we already did this with Goldfinger, like, eight movies ago. And it was way more interesting back then when he was cheating at Rummy. This is a bad game. At least we all understand Rummy.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
That's a game you play when you're bored and have cards and just need something to do because Rummy's easy. Backgammon is stupid.
Yeah, it definitely is interesting.
Sorry to all you backgammon fans, but you know it's true.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even really see that in a lot of casinos anymore. And if it's there, I never see people playing it.
No. No, it's because it's a head-to-head game and the house has to take its take. It's not nearly as interesting as poker anymore.
That's true. Yeah.
Now, you were talking about the racism, and it's true. We have the whole sequence in India with the snake charmer, the man meditating on bedded nails, the sword swallower. It all feels very racist. It's like they had a chart of every trope that they could do, and they're like, let's hit all of them.
Yeah, I mean, hit every Indian racist thing we could possibly think of that we can walk. It was bad. I've seen better walkthroughs than Indiana Jones going through places that are more less racist than this, and he spends a lot of time in that area. So
it was really bad. And then, of course, we get a chase sequence through the whole Indian marketplace that's more comedic than action-packed, and you're just sitting there going, what movie are we watching? When people complain about the silliness of the Roger Moore era, it feels like it's distilled right down into Octopussy.
That's like ground zero for what people could say about this being just campy and weird. It's just watch this sequence and it's it just says it all.
Yeah, you want to talk about the good of the Roger Moore era, you go to For Your Eyes Only. You want to talk about the bad, you can just point to this sequence in Octopussy and the clown costumes and everyone's sitting there going, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, I get it. The Bond girl and villain henchwoman is Magda, played by Christina Weyborn, who was 23 at the time of the film's release. And bear in mind, Roger Moore at this point was 2 years older. He's not just old enough to be her parent, he's clearly old enough now to be her grandparent. If it was like 18 and then 18, the math is bad.
Yeah, it really is. And credit to Roger Moore, at least across these films, he doesn't come off as the rapey, creepy Bond, but it is definitely not creepy to see a 50-year-old man with a 20-year-old woman.
Not here, but yeah, we'll get to that. She does also have the terrible line when he asks about her octopus tattoo, and she goes, "That's my little octopussy." And I'm like, no one can make that line sound good. No one. No. It, like, the film tries to explain it away eventually because that octopus tattoo is the symbol of the main heroine, who's named Octopussy for reason. She says, "That's my dad's pet name for me." And I'm like, did you and your dad have a relationship we shouldn't be talking about?
Yeah, no, he's just really into cats, I guess. I don't know.
I'm guessing he saw Goldfinger's like, pussy galore. I can work with that. No. That's all around, that's a terrible name and a terrible explanation for a terrible name. No. Maude Adams did play Octopussy, and she was 38 at the time of filming, so much closer to Bond's age at that point. I'm willing to accept that pairing more so. It's also interesting because she is one of the only actresses to play two different full-fledged Bond girls in movies, because she was also Andrea Anders over in The Man with the Golden Gun.
Interesting.
So yeah, she got brought back because apparently they liked her. I don't think they gave her anything to do in this film, though. She's wasted. She's just as wasted here as she was in The Man with the Golden Gun, and I feel bad for her. While Bond is escaping from the villains, he does a very stupid Tarzan yell while swinging from vines, and I'm sitting there going, what is this movie even?
Exactly what you think it is at this point, just a bad movie.
And while we're discussing Octopussy, the Roger Moore era started poorly when it came to treatment of women. We thought he was doing better all the way up through Magda, and then he forces himself on Octopussy, the one pairing that actually made sense. And you're like, she was actually into you, dude. You didn't have to force yourself onto her. And yet he did.
I don't know. Maybe he felt more comfortable about the age difference in this one, but I don't know why they did that. That bothers the hell out of me when you pointed out again. Like, it was very easily there was some chemistry between him, so let's just have him rape her, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I could explain away the relationship he had with Domino, as that movie was supposed to be a Sean Connery movie that they then just inserted Roger Moore into. After that film, Roger Moore's characters were doing just fine with women. He didn't like to sleep with the really young ones. He tried to treat the other ones with respect. And then we get to Octopussy, and for some reason, he falls back into Sean Connery standards, and I don't even know why they did that.
I don't know. Very confusing, but here we are.
56 years old more at this point. He really wasn't built for action anymore. After he deals with Octopussy, he then tries to go and track down the bomb, and he gets into this whole chase sequence on a train, and they have to work their level best to even make it look halfway interesting, because it's really not, because 56-year-old Roger Moore was not built for this.
No, no. Clearly the limitations of physicality are here, and yeah, you can see the twilight is coming on the Roger Moore era, which, I mean, at this point, say what you want about that.
Yeah, he probably should have retired two or three movies ago, and instead we still get one more adventure with him after that, where even he's sitting there going, guys, I'm too old, what are you thinking? If I was Bond's age, Bond would have retired by now.
You would think, right? Leave this a young man's game at this point.
Yeah, no, it's bad. The nuke makes it to the base, we see the timer, it has 5 minutes on it. Bond knows it's going to go off at any second. So the thing he does to get onto the base is sneak into a clown wagon and put on the full costume and makeup. And you're sitting there going, this would take longer than 5 minutes to put this costume on, let alone then get to the nuclear bomb, guy.
It's so funny, because, like, I used to watch a lot of TLC with my wife, like, when we were dating back in the day, because she loved to watch that, and there was always, like, those, you know, that Say Yes to the Dress shows, or everything she would watch, and they always talked about, like, for the lady, you need, like, your five-minute face, like, what can you go out of the house with a five-minute face, and, like, this guy gets the five-minute face of full-ass clown makeup, and I'm like, Jesus.
Like, did you just have a mold that you could just slap your face into and pull out? Like, is no way, just putting the white grease paint down alone takes longer than 5 minutes, and they're like, we did all this and a costume, and he still gets there with like a minute and a half to spare. Like him running up 10 flights of steps in the previous movie, this is what broke my suspension of disbelief in Octopussy. That just could not happen.
Agreed. That there's a lot of like liberty with time and stuff like that. Like timers in these movies tick a lot faster.
Yeah.
Like I remember when it was in Goldfinger, that nuke was ticking pretty fast, yet there was still quite a bit of time left every time they flash back to it. So it happens, but this was just really bad.
This was unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's the whole end sequence with the circus performers working for Octopussy. Not the bad ones, the good ones, because apparently not only does she invest in them, but she just trains them, which is more than she said before. They invaded Khan's compound, and it doesn't work, because most of them are not built for this kind of action, only to then have Bond come riding into the sunset to save everyone on a hot air balloon. And I'm like, movie, please.
What an interesting mode of transportation he chose for this. Very discreet.
Very discreet, very fast, very easy to get in. Like, I don't even know. I did appreciate all the women swooning for Q afterwards, and he's like, I don't have time for this. Maybe later.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, Q, you're great. And it's a pity that this movie is so fucking stupid, because that core kernel of KGB having a rogue faction trying to steal a bomb and sneak it onto a base to cause an explosion that would then force all of NATO to disarm and force them to turn their back on the United States. That's an actually good idea. That's a really solid plot point that they emphasize near the end of the movie when they finally decide to explain everything. But hour and a half, hour 45 minutes of this movie doesn't really relate to that, and they waste a good idea on a terrible movie.
Yeah, I mean, very much so. Disappointing.
It's so disappointing. So yeah, Octopussy is definitely one of the worst of the Roger Moore era, which then makes it one of the worst of the, like, James Bond series in general, which is a tragedy because you proved in the previous film you guys could make a good one.
Yeah, you had it in you, and then you just decided to not even throw the B team at this movie. Like, it was just a convoluted grouping of ideas. It was almost like Bond on Mad Libs, like I said. Like,
it is
a whole bunch of shit thrown together.
Yeah, you spin the wheel every time you have a new plot point. It reminds me of Kevin Smith said that when he was writing Red State, which is seemingly out of nowhere for this, but still. When he was writing Red State, he'd write, like, a chunk of the movie, and then he'd pass it to a friend. And whenever the friend said he expected a plot point, Kevin Smith would then do a left turn with the story and take it in a different direction. And that's why Red State is such a weird movie that goes from, like, horror movie at a compound to, like, almost the end of the world, Judgment Day by the end of it. Spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it. It's a weird movie and kind of dumb. But it's like Kevin Smith did this thing. This feels like that. Every time the movie is supposed to zig, it zags, and they spin a wheel to see what the next dumb plot point is that they can go to, and they just don't let the movie sit. It just keeps moving, which, but it doesn't hold together at all.
It does not, no. It's just a lot of ideas that are never really coming together, and it doesn't even, like, keep you guessing. It just keeps you confused.
Yeah.
I was not confusing. A fan of that, Again, the 2 hours plus of this, sometimes these movies feel a lot longer than they should be, like you said. This is a plot that, while non-existent for the most part, is very easily done in a lot less time.
Yeah, Now, this could have been a half-hour episode of James Bond Jr., and it probably wouldn't have been any worse than what we actually got right here.
No, it might have even been better if it was shorter. You know, put this on the BBC on Saturday morning or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Put it on Climax on CBS.
Find it on BritBox.
Ah, well, at least we got one good movie in the Roger Moore era that we can actually point to and be like, this was good. Roger Moore has it in him. He's not the problem with these films. It's everything around him.
Yeah, quality acting from Roger Moore is at least there for the most part. And he's professional, so good on him. But, I mean, we're getting to where Bond starts getting better at some point. I can't wait to get there.
No, if I will say anything about this, it's that this rewatch through all these movies that I did has given me a greater appreciation for Roger Moore's Bond. It's given me a worse opinion of his films, but I actually like him as Bond a lot more than I used to.
I agree with that. And like, you know, he is the consummate professional through all the movies. You know, while he is not the best spy at times with some of the things they have him do, and he doesn't have some of the best one-liners, and there's some goofy shit, he's at least a good actor that doesn't just phone it in.
He tries so hard to save this film. And Connery
was done at the end of his run, and you could just tell. He was getting drunk on set. Like, he's not going anywhere without vodka. Like, you could tell. I mean,
Roger Moore did not phone it in.
Yes, so you got to give him at least that. And yeah,
I
don't, you know,
credit to him. I don't hate him. I just hate his movies, and I feel bad about that because he deserved better.
He did. Yeah, it shows the weakness of, you know, some of the writing here by a mile.
Yeah, it does. Oh well, we have one more of his set to do before we are free of him, and he is free of this whole fucking series. Yeah. A View to a Kill comes next, and it's the one where even he was kind of done. And then finally we'll get into the Dalton era and get at the point where the Bond films actually slowly start to get better.
Yeah. So I have fond memories of the two Timothy Dalton movies, so I'm excited to watch them again.
People like him. They say he's darker. He's more interesting. We'll see when we get there, but we still have to get through one Roger Moore before we get to that.
Yeah, at least it's only one next time. We don't got to pull the doubleheader again because, these are getting old pretty quick. It's
getting real bad. Yeah. This has been Not So Live from Astoria G, not talking about our own little octopussy. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Your buddy, Mike the Ghoul. Gonna not try to double cross his buddy in the next film.
See you all next time.